This is Empower the Spirit with Dr. Douglas Kelly.
And welcome for Wednesday, November 30th, last day of November 2011. My name is Doug Kelly. So glad you could join us tonight on our new day and time. And of course, with me is Dr. Vicki Hunter. Welcome.
Good evening, everyone. Glad to be here.
Yes. And so we've got, obviously, a new name, formerly Empower the Spirit, now Metaphysical Universe, with a tagline of exploring science and spirituality. And of course, this program is a weekly broadcast of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science as part of our regular educational program. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit. And we do that by examining, exploring science and spiritual issues and interesting stuff. So we welcome to all those who are listening to the program live, as well as those who are listening to the archive. Now, tonight we're going to be discussing a little bit about the new show name and slightly different format, slightly.
We're always trying to tweak things.
Yeah.
We're always trying to tweak it up and kind of move along also with what people want to hear about, too.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that in a moment. And then after a few minutes, we're going to get into the topic of understanding and overcoming adversity. And we're also going to discuss belief systems and how they're changing in modern times. If you would like to participate in the program as far as live listeners go, you're certainly welcome to do that. You can ask questions in the chat room, as always. You're also welcome to call in. The number is 714-459-3973. It's there on your page. And Reverend John Hightower will be screening your calls, as always. So, that's the intro stuff. This is actually episode number 36, so we're climbing up there a little bit.
Wow, 36, no.
36, okay. 36. So, we have a new name, a new day, and a new time. And so, we're going to talk a little bit about why. And Vicki, you kind of already mentioned it. You know, we're looking to tweak. We're looking to choose a time slot that's the best for most people.
Well, I think it's just also part of our evolution. You know, we're still in that learning, growing process with the MCHS Church Show and the radio. And so this just seems like a natural step. We went from Sunday evenings and now going right to the middle of the week, and perhaps at a time that it's not just for, and we have to make this kind of a point also, not just for our North American students and participants, but also across the globe.
Yeah, those time zones are, it's really tough to try to figure out the best time for the most people. And so that's why we decided to do it 1 hour later, 10 o'clock Eastern, which is, it's later at night, but hopefully not too terribly late for folks. And then, it's like, 7 o'clock on the west coast of the States, and then it just goes all over the place from there.
Yeah, and then in the Philippines, where Jericho is, of course, it's morning, I believe.
Yeah, I think it's 10 o'clock in the morning.
I think so. So we're, all we can do is keep tweaking it up a little bit, trying to update the program, integrate things a little bit, and who knows? We'll just keep doing that as we evolve and as we grow and go through our little learning curves too. So I'm really excited about this new format. Metaphysical Universe certainly opens it up. We're exploring science and spirituality. Other topics that might be closer to the heart of some of our listeners and, listeners that we don't have yet. So, again, tell your friends, tell people, and that's what we're attempting to do. And if anybody has any ideas for shows or topics that they would like to address that's educational, supportive, and of interest, we welcome that.
Yeah. And, and our format's not changing much. We're still going to be exploring the same topics that we were, the previous name was Empower the Spirit. Well, it's still going to do that. That's still the point. But we're really trying to attract more metaphysical people, and hence having that in the title of the show will help with the searches and so forth. So we'll continue to do that. Probably one of the format changes we're making is that we're Vicki and I are kind of combining our shows, and we're going to explore different topics through each program. So if you have topics you'd like to hear, you have some suggestions, you can email us at admin@mchschurch.org, and we will take those into consideration because we're always looking for topics. We occasionally will continue to have guests now and then, and so on and so forth. So,
well, you know, we all have our adversities, and that being the topic of this evening, because a lot of people are going through difficult times, and how do we deal with adversity? And, of course, later on we'll address belief systems a little bit and how that tends to be changing globally, right down to the individual level and the collective unconscious level. But adversity is a huge and important topic.
It is, and I hope that we can, well, I hope as many folks as possible will listen to this program, because this particular program on adversity is perhaps different than others. Maybe, maybe not. I know it's different because it comes from largely from my perspective. And you know, like most other people, I've seen an adversity or two during my life. So I want to share what I've learned through the adversity that I faced in my life. And, of course, Vicki will chime in as well and share some of her relevant thoughts. And
I'm good at chiming.
Yeah, and, you know, if you have questions, feel free to ask them in the chat room or give us a call. But let's talk about adversity, and it's obviously a deep topic, and it's a relevant topic. I mean, in the last few years, a lot of folks have lost jobs, have had to downsize homes, lost homes, lost possessions. You know, it's been a tough time for a lot of people in America, North America, Europe, and so forth. A lot of folks are facing this economic crisis, and hopefully it'll be passing soon. But that doesn't rule out the rest of the folks in the world who face stuff like this on a daily basis. So one of the things that we can all be assured of is that as human beings, we all face adversity at some point in our life, in one form or another, sometimes to a more intense degree, sometimes not. It's just all over the place, you know. But we all have been there. We've all been in the clutches of despair. We've been cut to the heart with pain, tears streaming down our cheeks. You know, we're often unsure of the right path to take. And all that stuff just lurks within us, you know. We have our uncertainties, our fears, our pain. Nobody is exempt from this. I remember kind of a funny thing years ago when I was a young man. I think this was when I was in my 20s. It was like, I don't know, 6 years ago, something like that. Yeah, I paused for the laugh.
I caught it. I just didn't know if I could laugh out loud.
Oh, you can laugh out loud. And so, anyway, so, you know, there was some tough times growing up, and I was talking with my dad, and he gave me some sage advice that, you know, can only come from someone who's been there and done that, somebody who's looked adversity square in the eye and overcome it. And so he had something to share, and I waited there with bated breath. And as I did, he bestowed his grand wisdom upon me. And with a very deliberate and slightly cheerful tone of voice, he said, "Don't worry, son. The first 100 years are the hardest."
Absolutely.
Gee, thanks, Dad. I appreciate that. You know, obviously it was meant to be, you know, a lighthearted approach to it, but he also understood, you know, the real tragedy of those words, really, and so did I. The truth is that we each face these day-to-day disappointments and failings and unforeseen happenings and challenges and on we make our share of mistakes and blunders, and it goes on. But here's the thing, and here's where perhaps I'm maybe different. I've come to the point where I say, well, okay, so the first 100 years are the hardest. It's probably true. Of course, you know, I don't know if anybody really lived past 100 years, so who knows. But the point is, why do they have to be the hardest? Why do the first 100 years have to be the hardest? Why does it have to be this way? In my opinion, it doesn't. We don't have to settle. for adversity. We don't have to surrender to it. And there's some things that we can do to make that so. And we're going to talk about that. First, I want to define what adversity is in my own way. And I just want to check the chat room.
We're good.
Yeah, and well, Kathy makes a good point, and that's very true. Adversity is only hard when you're going through it. Once you're through it, then you wonder how you live like that, essentially, you know, why you didn't do what you had to do quicker. And that's absolutely true. Absolutely true. All right, so let's talk about what is adversity. We're all thinking, yeah, I know what adversity is, but let's define it. Let's put it in a perspective that perhaps we can maybe look at it through a different lens, from a different angle. Adversity occurs when something in our lives is in a state of disorder. Now think about that just for a moment. Adversity is a state of disorder. That's what adversity is. And when you really think about that, it really makes a lot of sense. Let's illustrate it. And before I illustrate it, let me just add in a couple of more points real quick here. When we empower ourselves, we really reclaim that state of order, don't we? When we restore the order, the adversity goes. You know, that lack of order robs us of precious energy and emotional strength. And the more that our life is out of order, the less power that we have. You know, put another way, adversity is a byproduct of a chaotic situation. You know, it's the anguish and the frustration that we feel. But again, when that situation is restored to its proper order, the adversity gives way to empowerment. So let's illustrate it with a dark room. Whenever we walk into a dark room, the first thing that we do is turn on the light switch, right? Well, we could say that when we turn on that light switch, when we flip that switch, we are empowering the light bulb, to shine. And when a light bulb is shining, it is in its proper order, right? When a light bulb is not shining, not illuminating, or it's burned out, it's in a state of disorder. Why? Because the purpose of a light bulb is to shine. It's to illuminate the room. So when a light bulb is not shining, it's not fulfilling its purpose. Now, if we ever so gradually dim the lights over an extended period of time, maybe with one of those light dimmers, and we just do this very gradually over a period of time, at some point we'll probably say, you know, this room just not as bright as it used to be. And yet we look at the light bulb and it's burning, it's on, it's working, and so we conclude, yeah, well, the light bulb's okay, so what's wrong with this? And so we start to look other places for the solution to this dimmer room. Well, when we think about it, we're a lot like that light bulb. You know, life's challenges have a way of dimming our spirit at times, and our life becomes more disordered. Our light starts to dim. And if this adversity or this state of disorder goes on too long without relief, then the bulb could even burn out at times. And of course, we don't want that. So when we look at this dim spirit, this dim light, with one adversity is piling on another one, when one disorder is piling on another disorder, we say, I just don't have the power I used to. And we start looking for solutions, hopefully. Sometimes we just get, you know, buried by it. We just get powerless because that's part of adversity. And just like that light bulb, its purpose is to shine. Well, we too have a purpose to fulfill. And that's why adversity and meaning are so closely linked so often. Because, and they are, they're very much linked. We're going to get into that in just a second. We have a purpose in life to fulfill. We have a purpose to shine on the world in some unique way and deliver greatness every day. When we face adversity, when something or several things in our life is in a state of disorder, our spirit grows dim, we lose our power, just like the light bulb, and it's kind of like walking into that dark room but not being able to find the light switch. So how do we find the light switch? How do we deal with adversity? Well, if we consider that adversity is really nothing other than a state of disorder, there's the key right there. Look at your life. What in your life is in a state of disorder? What is not in its proper place? We can visualize that. You know, take a room that's cluttered. I mean, you can see it. It's cluttered. And we see, oh, this is not in its proper place. That's not in its proper place. And so if we go through that room and we clean it up, we put things back into their proper place, we restore order, and the room is no longer cluttered. Same analogy with our life. What about our life is cluttered? Think about this. This is important for you and you alone in your own world. What in your world is in disorder? What is not working out properly? What's cluttered? You have to think about that for a moment, and usually you'll come up with some things pretty quickly. Like everybody, we've all had our challenges. We've all had our adversities. You know, I faced them too. And I remember back when, well, it's been now over 12 years ago, but, you know, when I was faced with living in an alcoholic marriage, alcoholic relationship, my late ex-wife was the alcoholic. I cannot tell you the amount of adversity that that kind of situation can bring on. And no matter how much I talk about it, unless you've lived through it, you won't understand just how stressful, how the state of disorder. And you know, it's so natural to want to make some sense of it and try to figure it out logically. Well, there is no logic to it. And sometimes that's true with adversity. Sometimes, especially in relationships, there might not be any logic, any logical explanation for the other person's behavior. There is no logic. It's emotion. You can't define it by logic. And so I was lost. You know, I'd go to my office. I was in the financial world, and I'd go to my office, and I'd sit there staring at the walls. I mean, I'd lost my power totally. I couldn't do what I needed to do. I was in sales. I was trying, you know, I needed to make calls. I needed to do that. I had no power. You know, I couldn't do it. I was tapped. My light bulb was really dim. And day after day, I would sit there, have every excuse in the world to avoid doing what I really needed to do and make a living. You know, and it was not easy times. I mean, I needed to make the money. I didn't have much, you know, but I'd lost my power. And there's a lot of things that can happen, especially among friends. Maybe you've had a friend tell you, well, you know, quit being wrapped up or wallowing in self-pity. You know, I've had people tell me that. Don't wallow in self-pity, you know, and that's not a good thing to hear. But, and you know, I didn't like it. And the more I thought about it, I thought, you know, all right, look, this is an impossible situation. I don't feel like I'm wallowing in self-pity, but, you know, maybe I'm a little too focused on that. So I'll grant them that. And so I started looking elsewhere. It's not like that was the turning point by any stretch. It was just added to my dilemma. But time went on. Things happened. I tried to understand what was going on here with the situation. At times, I would play the role of the victim, and that's another big thing that can happen to us when we're in the midst of adversity. We can play that role of the victim. It's, you know, it's not easy to be victimized by adversity. I'll tell you that. You know, the adversity can come from any number of different directions. If it's an abusive person or an alcoholic or an addict or anything like that, just a toxic relationship, it's not easy. We can fall into that role of the victim. But when we play that role of the victim, we lose our power. It drains out of us. We have nothing left to give, and we end up often whining to anybody that will listen, which is often our friends or our family. And the more we do, the more entrenched we become in that role, in that belief system, so to speak. And the interesting thing about playing the role of the victim is that when we do that, we are really living in the past. You know, you could say, yeah, well, this adversity is current. It's my present. But we're still usually whining about what happened yesterday, last week, last month, whatever. We need to redirect our focus. It's like we've talked about so many times and a lot of people are aware of, you get what you focus on. So you have to focus on what you want, not on what you don't have. Or in other words, you have to focus on restoring the order and not focus on so much why things are in a state of disorder. You've got to figure that out to solve it. But you can't focus too much on the past, on what happened. You have to focus on solutions, on resolution. I have this book that I've read several times over the years. It's called The Supreme Philosophy of Man. It's written by Alfred Armand Montaupert. I think you can still get it. It may or may not be on Amazon. I don't know. The Supreme Philosophy of Man. And if you remember, Montaupert is the last name, you'll find it. But he made a quote in this, and this thing always resonated with me. He wrote, "He is a valiant man indeed who can suffer without too much complaining, who can be patient when misunderstood, who, when maligned, slandered, or falsely accused, can keep his heart free from resentment and to bring him whatever vindication he needs. There is no explanation quite so effective as silence. Explanations rarely explain. Those who demand explanations usually have their opinions formulated before you begin to explain. If you are right, your life will do its own explaining. If you are wrong, you can't explain it. So go calmly on your way and forget everything but the business of right living and let time explain you." And that's the end of that quote. So if our adversity is coming from that direction, we can take those words to heart. And I can't emphasize that one. My dad always used to say, explanations rarely explain. I know where he got it now, but it's so true. Sometimes there is no explanation. You just have to move on. All right, so let's get into six different points that hopefully will help you to find that light switch, to restore that order. And again, Vicki, if you have any comments, you're more than welcome to jump in at any point.
Well, it's so very well put and very well said that, we all have our moments and we've all had times in our life where, geez, what do we do? I have very often said that there's going to come a time when I'm going to get sick of myself.
Don't say it ain't so.
And then that's when I change things. But I really do appreciate that last little bit of that line, let time explain you. That is huge. It's mm-hmm. It's a monumental statement that time is our friend if we are even patient enough with ourselves sometimes. So it's big. It's a big topic. And, how do we get through it? You know, the key. How do we get through it?
Well, let's talk about that. Now, there's no real single cure-all to all these different types of adversities. We all know that. I mean, that's easy. I mean, there are different solutions. Each type of adversity or each different situation will require some kind of a different and unique solution. And we'll discuss some things that you can do and also some tips in solution finding here in a minute. So here are these six different things to keep in mind as you try to resolve that situation, the adversity. Number one, you need to have a proper attitude toward adversity. It's been well said that in the past many times that it's not so much what happens to us that matters, but rather how we react to what happens to us. That's what matters most. We need to understand this one crucial point and listen carefully. Our problems have no life of their own. The only life they have is the life that we give them. I'm going to repeat that and explain it. Our problems have no life of their own. The only life they have is the life that we give to them. Thomas A. Kempis, a 13th century monk, made an interesting observation. I've adjusted it for modern English, but he wrote, "What hurt could it do you if you would just let it pass and make no account of it? Could it even so much as pluck one hair from your head?" End quote. And we have to look at our problems realistically. When we are in the emotion, when we're in that moment and we've got this stuff going on, what can it do to us? Usually, most of the time, rarely will it result in our death or in physical harm. And so we really have to put our problems in perspective. Will this problem kill us? Probably not. We may anguish over it. We may not know how to solve it, but will it really kill us? Usually no. You know, are our troubles so bad that they could yank even one hair from our head? No, not likely. Usually not likely. You know, we're not going to die. We're not going to be tortured, imprisoned, or burned at the stake for them either. So it becomes clear we need to bring our troubles into perspective. After all, how bad can it be? Now, I'm not trying to make light of the adversity. I've been through it. I'm speaking from experience here, serious experience. Usually, it's not nearly as bad as we make it out to be because we're in the emotion. You know, do our problems really matter all that much in the grand scheme of things? Probably not. But when we are consumed with our problems, our troubles, consciously or not, we believe that our problems are somehow the most important in the whole universe. The truth is that they're not. Even though they're the most important to us, the fact remains that no matter how we slice it, there will always be somebody out there whose problems are worse than ours. So we have to bring perspective to it. Yeah, go ahead.
I might just inject here that this is not meant in any way to disregard people who are in life or death situations.
Sure.
You know, such as an abusive marriage, for instance, where there is potential harm to somebody. Those are very critical things to consider, that is when harm can come to someone, and that's when decisions have to be made. This, and what we're talking about here, is just the adversity and problems and how we stew with things and looking for ways out or how to change our thinking, I think. And that's something that, you know, for our listeners, just to discern that difference.
Yes.
When there are life or death situations, that is a whole different ballgame.
Well, it is, but in principle, it's still a state of disorder, and we need to act, especially in the examples
Absolutely.
You mentioned. And they're
Absolutely.
Good examples, because if you are in an abusive relationship and there is a potential for physical harm, you need to act, and you need to listen to the rest of this so that you can make some good choices here. And I appreciate you bringing that up. Okay, so bring your problems into perspective. Usually, they're not going to result in death. If you lost your job, you're going to have to cut down on expenses. You may have to move. You may have to get a cheaper car. Those are all, nobody likes to do that. But those will not kill you, those types of problems. They're tough to get through, but you can do this. So bring your problems into perspective. That's the first point. Have a proper attitude toward adversity.
You know, I might even add into, even if you're diagnosed with a disease, some kind of an illness, an ailment, there is a process that one goes through about who's in charge. And it's really about, is the disease in charge or are you in charge?
Mm-hmm.
And there is this little turning point that I'm the boss of me. And
yeah.
You take it on. And that's all part of the process, too.
And that's a great point. And you know what? It just got me thinking about, there are so many physical ailments that are nothing more or less than manifestations of inner turmoil, inner stress, inner demons. You know, you clear up that disorder within, and the disorder without becomes clear, too. That's why I've always said, if you want your outside world to change, you got to change your inside world first. At least you can rule out those psychosomatic manifestations. I had migraines for, 15 or more years at a point in my life. When I made big changes in my life, I left my religion, I left my alcoholic marriage, they vanished without explanation. They vanished. I can only explain those due to cognitive dissonance and severe stress. That's all
well,
I can explain.
Well, and the principles of Chinese medicine are also that in thoughts and energy that, you know, project into the organs And there's a whole really interesting interconnectedness of energy to our bodies. So absolutely. In fact, I got to tell you, as a young girl, I suffered with migraines too. As soon as I got certified in my hypnosis training, and I was 21, by the way, at that time, and doing meditations and self-hypnosis, they went away.
Yeah.
Interesting. But if somebody is facing something like cancer, this is my thought on it, having been there myself. It's not a point then with certain ailments to say, why do I have this? I think, honestly, a lot of time that's a waste of time. Why did I get this? How did I get this? You're not then taking it on into the moment and challenging it. And that does not bring about wellness unless you want to find the root cause of something, which may or may not occur. In my view, it's take it on, we accept what it is, and then you start to move forward in whatever it is that you're dealing with. So manifestations of illness can come in many, many forms from many reasons. And this is about the things we can manage, we can control, and we can understand that very often there are psychosomatic reasons for why we don't feel well.
Mm-hmm. So very often, not always, but very often.
So, true enough.
Excellent points. So let's talk about the second thing to keep in mind in dealing with adversity. We need to learn the lessons contained in the adversity. In the book As a Man Thinketh by James Allen, he very insightfully states, man is where he is that he may learn that he may grow. And as he learns the spiritual lesson which any circumstance contains for him, it passes away and gives place to other circumstances. This one nugget literally changed my whole attitude toward adversity. It was one of the biggest lessons I've learned in my life. And I'll paraphrase it again. Whatever circumstances you currently find yourself in, they're going to either be desirable or not, right? And if you're dealing with adversity, those circumstances are obviously undesirable. Well, those circumstances came about because of choices we've made, usually. Okay, I'm not going to get into the freak accidents, the unexpected illness, that kind of thing. I'm just talking about general adversity in life. When we learn the spiritual lesson contained in those circumstances, they pass in time. Now, is there a difference between knowing a lesson and learning a lesson? The answer is absolutely. How often have we said, gee, I really shouldn't do that, but we do anyway? We know the lesson, but we haven't learned the lesson.
Oh, something I knew I shouldn't crucial. Have married him.
Yeah, really.
When you're right at the altar, and I don't think I should be doing this, but you do it anyway, mm-hmm. and then you end up with the 10 years of exactly what mm-hmm. we're talking about.
Absolutely. And here's the crucial difference is when we learn a lesson, we change. We change our thinking, we change our approach, we change our actions, we change our beliefs. So we can know a lesson and not have learned it. And this is crucial. So look at your circumstances. What's the spiritual lesson contained in them? Now, a lot of times we'll scratch our head and say, I just don't know. I've done that too. I don't know what the spiritual lesson is here. But in time, it will manifest. It will become apparent to you. And I keep In my thoughts, I keep coming back to this one point, so I'm going to throw it in here now. The solution to your problems may lie outside of your belief system. That's another huge lesson that occurred to me years ago. I was looking for a solution within my belief system. There was no solution within that belief system. I was trying to save my alcoholic marriage, get her help. I was trying to save it within the context of my religious beliefs. There was no solution there. The solution was outside of my belief, and that involved leaving the marriage for me. And so that's a huge, huge, huge lesson. Number one, look for the lesson in the circumstances. Secondly, don't dismiss the possibility that the solution to the adversity may lie outside your belief system. That means you need to educate yourself, get more knowledge, broaden your beliefs, consider other angles, those kinds of things. We all have the human right of free will. We can change our circumstances. James Allen, in As a Man Thinketh, also wrote, "Circumstance does not make the man, it reveals him to himself." So adversity is not so much about contending with trouble as it is learning more about what's hidden in each side of us, hidden inside of each of us, I meant to say. Adversity can bring out the best or the worst in us, our true colors, and it can also illuminate us, enlighten us on life's deeper meaning.
I think what we're really saying, too, is that very often what we need to learn is unfamiliar. We're just on unfamiliar territory. Mm-hmm. You know, I always use this little one-liner of, I don't have a brain file for that.
Yeah,
you know?
That's a good one.
I just don't know because I've never had that experience, and I don't know how to put that through my brain. I don't know how to, you know, kind of figure that out. So I have to go into unfamiliar territory. And that's where I always say it's really important to keep an open mind, even in adversity. That's tough to do because the emotions are always in conflict. You know, we do tend to hang on to what we know. And that's totally understandable. It's completely human. But this challenges us, and that's what life is. So I think that's what we're saying, too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, that reminded me of my viewpoint way back when, as I felt like I was on this little tiny boat in the middle of the ocean, and there was fog everywhere, and it was dark, and I didn't know which way to go, and I kept feeling my way.
Couldn't find the paddle?
Yeah, well, I it wouldn't matter anyway, because I didn't know where to go. I didn't know which direction to go. I couldn't see ahead of me. But here's the interesting thing about it. As I worked through the adversity, as I started making decisions and finding solutions to it, and making bold moves, and getting my life back in order, that fog began to lift. And the interesting thing is, yeah, I was in this little boat on the water, but the water was only a foot deep. And I didn't know that until, you know, the sun came out a little bit and the fog lifted, and I could see the water was clear and it was only a foot deep. So a lot of times I'm trying to emphasize that we may really infuse a lot of emotion and a lot of intensity into our adversity when it's not really warranted in every case. So let's talk about the third point. Quit living in the past. What is done is done. Neither you nor I can do anything to change even one second of it, you know, let alone big things about it. Our experiences are who we are. They've made us. Everyone has painful experiences. That's a part of what shapes us as human beings. We need our painful experiences and adversity to be who we are. If we did not go through this adversity, we would not be the same exact person we are. We'd be somebody different, maybe not somebody as good. So we've got to, again, learn those lessons. Live today and look to the future without keeping one foot in the past.
You know, if I can add in here, one of the comments that I hear very frequently, and I've said it to myself, how come I didn't know that? How come I didn't see that? And there is, in this very competitive world, or a world that has us, you know, always trying to put on a happy face or put on a particular face, you know, we think we have to know everything, and we think we have to know how to manage every situation. And then when something got by us, we feel, why didn't I know that? And this is a tough one. It's a tough one to accept our humanness and that everything is an evolution. You know, because truly, I think if I look back, if I do, I don't do it very often, but when I do, it's like I would have done it differently because I would have known something different. Not because of the outcome, but because maybe there was a better way to handle it or a better way to do it. But I didn't know any better at the time. So we have to have an exercise compassion for ourselves. And I think we have to stop giving away things that we don't have for ourselves, because that's where we get ourselves into a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not real.
Yeah.
You can't give away what you don't have for yourself.
All right, so number four. We've talked about three so far. Here's number four. Focus on a healthy outcome. And I had mentioned this a few minutes ago. Focus on what you want, not on what you've lost, not on what you don't have. You got to look forward. You got to look to the future. You know, not with one foot in the past. So focus on what you want to happen. Look to the future. Open your mind up to possibilities. And this is a good point for the 180 principle. The 180 principle simply is turn it 180 degrees around. Ask yourself, what would be the stupidest thing to do to solve this adversity, to resolve it, to get it out of my life? What would be the stupidest thing to do? Think contrarian. If you had nothing to lose, what would you do? Those are powerful questions, folks. If you're in the midst of some adversity, some difficult situation, whatever it is, whether it's a job, whether it's a relationship, if there was nothing to lose, what would you do? Now, I'm not suggesting you do that. I'm suggesting you, it stimulates your creative thinking. Look for solutions. You know, lay down on the floor and look at the ceiling. You'll get a different view of the room. And it might even help you to come up with some other solutions. So focus on a healthy outcome is number four. Number five is make the effort to be less consumed. Adversity can consume us if we don't manage it. You know, we got to work at this every day. Sometimes we'll catch ourselves becoming mentally and emotionally consumed with the adversity, with our problems. We need to make a firm decision to change our thoughts, change the channel. When we change our thoughts, we change our beliefs. When we change our beliefs, we change our actions. And as we do this, we become gradually less consumed. You can use meditation exercises. You can do what I did. I created this, what I called a focus list. And it was just a folder, like a file folder. And in this file folder, I would put quotes, maybe a news story, maybe a poem, maybe an article, maybe a picture. But they were all positive, and they all spoke to me, if you will. They were meaningful to me, and they helped me to have hope, and they helped me with solutions. They helped me to manage my thought process, manage my attitude. So maybe a focus list would work for you as well.
You know, if I might inject that, one of the other ways that has worked for me, and I've recommended to a lot of folks in the past, is emotional management. And I use a clock because I think it's really important to acknowledge emotion, or we oppress it, or it can somehow bite us in our behavior later. So if you're feeling a particular way, look at your watch or your clock, say 10 minutes, go.
That's a great idea.
And just let her rip. And, you know, if in 10 minutes it's saying, I'm not done yet, a half an hour. And anything that goes beyond a half hour, I say, go lie down and start over. Sometimes it really is, and there's a body chemistry to stress. There's a, you know, when we're fixated on emotion, there's chemicals releasing in the body. So the meditation exercises are awesome. But very often I find that just being horizontal, just even a few minutes, so not just a sit-down meditation, but a lying-down meditation, and just breathe, let the body relax entirely, and then start over. But give it a time limit. It must have a time limit so you're the boss of your emotions. They aren't the boss of you.
And I love that idea, and I've often taught that, and I do teach that idea when it comes to dealing with grief and loss, and I teach. You know, when you've lost something invaluable, important to you, whether it's a loved one or whether it's whatever, it could be a job, it could be a pet, it could be anything. When
Absolutely.
That grief comes up, feel it for all it's worth. Explore it, touch it, hold it, caress it, feel it, and then let it go. Release it. And you put that time limit on it. And this is a great thing. If you're going to feel a certain way, fine, go for broke. Feel it for all it's worth. Then make a deliberate decision to release it. It's very powerful. So let's talk about the sixth point now, and that's simply the passing of time. Time, as they say, wounds all heals. Oh, wait. It heals all wounds, right? Both ways, doesn't it?
I wasn't going to say anything.
No, I was intentional. It works both ways, doesn't it? So if your adversity is brought about by some other person, don't worry. Time wounds all heals. If it's not, time will heal all wounds. So let a little time pass. But don't just be passive with it. You know, don't get stuck in that victim mode, relishing your misery, loving your pain. We have to break off that relationship we have built with our pain. Otherwise, it'll kill us too. We have to be positive and focus on solutions. Now, there's occasionally perhaps times when we really can't help ourselves, we will need to seek some help. But usually we can help ourselves. It doesn't mean you can't brainstorm with a confidant, with a trusted companion, with whoever, a counselor, a spiritual counselor. Vicky does that. You know, I do it on occasion. You know, you can, you've got friends, you've got whoever. You can certainly brainstorm, and that's a good thing. You've got to look for solutions, and don't forget that the solution you're looking for might be outside of your belief system. So you have
sometimes
to look at it from different angles.
Sometimes we just need to vent. Yes, yeah. Right. Sometimes we just need to vent. But I apply the same rule to venting. Is if you're calling up a friend and you've got your time limit, let's say a half hour of venting, and it's for no other reason than just the release. You know, so it's no longer just within you. It's also verbally, and it's a release of energy. Half hour, that's it. So sometimes even just the venting is helpful, mm-hmm. even though there's no answer at that particular moment.
So I hope that these points have helped. Listen to them again if you need to. Look at your problem with an open mind, your adversity. Look for what is in a state of disorder, and look for the way to bring it back into a state of order. There is simply no reason why the first 100 years have to be the hardest. It is up to us. We can make the changes that we need. We have the power. We have the ability. And we have to find meaning in that suffering, meaning in that adversity, and let that shape us into even greater people. Now, we've talked a lot about adversity and how to deal with it, and you may have noticed kind of an undercurrent here, and it's all about your attitude toward the adversity and looking for solutions. And our attitudes toward it really constitute our belief system. We need to change our beliefs.
Beliefs are huge.
Yes.
You know, even as children, we're stimulated by all kinds of external stimuli that file into, you know, generalized psychology would say implicit, explicit, procedural memories. But those translate through the intellect as belief systems. And that's what's important to recognize, that we even have belief systems we're not aware of. You know, we think consciousness is thought, and thought is thinking in a language. That's kind of a myth, really. The thought is how we are in our own experience that brings us into our thought. The messages are all there, and they are unconscious belief systems. And again, let's not confuse the belief system of thought with the belief system through our internal messaging. Just because we don't think it through the words doesn't mean it isn't a belief system. And then we act those things out. So when we're looking for whatever it is that we're tripping over, as I say, things that are in that unconscious, and we've been stimulated in ways to believe. You know, let me give you a good example of that, is that sometimes people think pain is pleasure. And from some childhood experiences, pain is pleasure. So things get a little bit mixed up, that becomes the belief system. So we have to stop for a moment and say, what is it I'm tripping over? What is my unconscious belief system that I'm acting out? Even if I wasn't told that belief system with words, I was told that belief system through all kinds of stimuli. So we can ask ourselves those questions. Belief systems, boy, this is a very interesting world when we are very far away from natural belief systems. But people are opening up, people are illuminating to say, what is it that I'm to believe in? What should I believe in? Well, first of all, you know, and Doug, we've talked about this a lot, you got to believe in yourself first.
Right.
And believing in yourself is basically saying, I'm a human being, and I've got rights to be here, and I've got rights to have my own thoughts, and I've got rights to have my own feelings, and I have a right to like blue instead of green. And if you even start out, sometimes I know it sounds silly, but starting out with things that are very simple and familiar, then you begin to explore things that are unfamiliar. And then it's the debriefing. Then it's just to go over things, say, you know what, I got to empty my little brain vault. I need space for the new stuff. So So once you, whenever you start to open your mind and you change your belief systems, if it does not assimilate, assimilation is critical, if it doesn't assimilate into what feels right for you and with all the other things that you've learned, you know that something isn't connecting properly. And we know that something has to get dumped out. And it's really that simple. If we're emotionally attached and our egos are emotionally attached to things we think we believe in, we're going to have a problem. But this is all part of adversity. You know, yeah. It's that circle. Because now the adversity is internal. So if I'm, you know, we talked about this last week on the show, you know, about, you know, why good people do bad things and what's the belief system. You know, outside authorities, internal authorities, and it's that circle that we keep going around and around. And I always say, just stop and breathe and start with the simplest things. You know, when I was the first a parent, I found myself slamming cupboard doors one day, and it shocked me because I finally realized what I had done. It was an unconscious behavior and a belief system that says, you know, when I'm pissed off, I can just slam cupboard doors. I can be violent in these ways. So I went, whoa, where did I get that? Is that something I took on by osmosis?
Yeah, like a carryover.
Absolutely. Or is that something I really decide that I want to do? What's my belief system here? Well, I decided to dump that behavior. I'm not going to slam cupboard doors anymore. But what I didn't do is replace it.
With so, you slamming know, heads or something?
Yeah, kicking the cupboard. Finding other ways to vent that. And I went, whoa, you know, I have something else inside that needs to be addressed. So whenever, you know, we recognize one thing we want to change, we have to fill it up. The same way as if you're adding new belief systems, you're learning and you're growing, if it doesn't assimilate correctly in your, you know, in your mental or intelligence filing system, as I call it, then you know that something needs dumping. It's kind of like that software that doesn't fit into the hardware. So there's this, I very often liken the brain and belief systems to computers. I think it's a great analogy to draw. One of the things that has been very important to me in my work is to stay open-minded about people with their right to their own belief systems. What was required of me is to find the centermost place of myself, hopefully, that has no judgment. In order to do that, I had to find that one common thread that I believed exists within all humankind and begin to build my own belief system from that center place. So it's not so much about the thinking about life as it is the living of life, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And that became my belief system. Now, I'm not saying everybody has to do that, of course. Everybody has their own journey. But the greatest adversity is ourselves. It's not what's outside of ourselves. Exactly what you're talking about earlier, Doug, it's the belief system within the self and how we are managers of our own adversities. And again, I'm not talking about, dealing with things like death or cancer or very profound things, but those will be very revealing about ourselves, hugely revealing. And how will we move through them? You know, you had mentioned something about things will pass. That's what my grandmother always said.
My dad did too.
This too shall pass, my dear girl. You know, you were talking earlier about some of the little nuggets of your dad. When my couple of years before my grandmother passed on, I'd asked her if she believed in reincarnation. And, no, dear, I wouldn't want to come back and do that again.
Well said.
And I said, well, Grant, what if you could take all of your life lessons with you? What if we assimilated it all somehow and it went into the next one? And there was a very long pause and a deep breath. And she says, well, if I have to, that wouldn't be so bad then. But the point being is like that movement forward and opening the mind to, you know, keep moving forward. She was the most tenacious woman I ever met through all of the adversities in her life. And that's actually what empowers me a lot of the time, that setting that kind of that mentor in your mind, that the one who has those really root core values that you can relate with. And you begin to build new belief systems, because this isn't 100 years ago. In fact, this isn't 50 years ago. We're in a high techno time. You know, where life is moving very fast. It's competitive. There's so many requirements of us that it's very easy to get lost in outside belief systems.
Yeah.
So we have to somehow be able to observe what we think we believe in and come back to the center of oneself.
And I want to interject something, too.
Absolutely.
That you reminded me of. You know, you talk about the adversity of yesteryear, you know, of 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, whatever. You know, our folks had it worse than us, yada, yada, yada. No, they didn't. And that's something that we have to understand. Adversity is a very personal thing, and it's all relative to the times. We have
Absolutely.
Challenges today that they didn't have 50 years ago or 100 years ago. They had challenges back then that we don't have today. We don't have to go and hunt all day or go out and work on the farm, you know, just to grow our food. We all have different sets, so it's all relative.
I think the single difference about now from then is this idea of security. The belief system is to buy into what we believe is secure so we don't have to think about it again. And it's like, if we put money away, you know, we'll have this, and I don't have to worry about it. And if my daughter gets married, I won't have to worry about her anymore. Or, you know, these ideas of security, there was no security 100 years ago. None at all. I mean, people worked until they dropped, or the children took care of them. And in many cultures today, that's the way it is. But people have bought into ideas about security. Therefore, it's been difficult to deal with change. You know, my grandparents didn't know if the crops were going to come in. 3 years of drought. You know, they had several years of fires. There was all kinds of adversity that they would deal with. But they never got the comfort of security. The security was love, family, and community. And that's what I think we need to restore more of now, mm-hmm. to begin to believe in ourselves and restore that unity amongst ourselves, that center core value.
Yes. So. Well stated. And since we're on the topic of adversity, take a moment, send out some positive energy to those who need it, those who are facing adversity, and many people are. Send some to yourself. You know, take that energy from the positiveness in the universe and just suck it in, just like that soul light, that higher self, that light above you. Draw in the strength, and it will help.
It's just a good point to make, that be each other's friends. Sit in the moment of listening, but don't sit in the moment of negative. And if you must, give it 10 minutes.
That's right.
Changes everything.
We really appreciate everybody joining us tonight with this new format, new night, new time. Hopefully it's been good. And join us next week. We'll have some more topics to talk about that are relevant to science and spirituality, to life skills, to just being more successful in life. If you have any topics that you would like to have us address, feel free to let us know. We would be happy to include those. So,
thanks for joining everybody.
Yeah, appreciate everybody's time tonight. Hope you
remember,
have a great
week.
Remember,
next Wednesday, 10 o'clock Eastern.
Have a great week, everybody.